Well, remember back when you were a kid and you pulled out Monopoly, the Monopoly game on those rainy summer days and spent almost all day playing a board game? Does that still happen anymore? Turns out the answer apparently is a resounding yes, only some of the games have been modified for the digital era. Now a look at the business of board games, games like Risk and Clue and Scrabble, and maybe it will encourage you to pull one off the shelf and give it one more try. With us now is Eric Martin. He runs a website called BoardGameGeek.com, and he joins us from Apex, North Carolina. Eric, nice to have you. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. Nice to be here. I'll point out I'm only the news editor. There's lots of other people involved.
Okay, you're the news editor of BoardGameGeek.com. Sounds good. Yes. Well, are people still playing Risk and Scrabble, Eric?
Tons. Tons of people play all the mainstream games that you think of. Hasbro releases new versions of them each year. A Jenga version with an exploding timer. You know, Monopoly now has a new version where you can customize it and put your photos in it. Right? There's all sorts of spinoffs. Clue is getting a Firefly version of Clue coming out, a Walking Dead version. There's all sorts.
Wait, explain that to me, because I'm a big fan of Clue. I used to play it with my kids. What are you talking about there?
Well, instead of the classic Clue theme where you have Mr. Green and Miss Scarlet, you will instead have characters from Firefly and perhaps, you know, sections of the ship. And you'll travel around on the ship and you'll have to solve the mystery. The gameplay will still be the same, but it has a new thematic setting for people who are interested in Firefly but don't want to, you know, it's a gift. In a sense, it's a nice gift item for those people.
But part of that game is the joy of playing something that's so traditional with Colonel Mustard and Miss Scarlet and all those, but Mrs. Peacock and all those people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. I mean, that's what keeps those games selling so well is that people are familiar with them. They go to the store. Oh, here's a new version of this game. It'll be perfect for my son or my daughter or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, if our listeners, let me get them involved here. Tell us if you still play board games around the table with the family. What games do you play? When do you do it? 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888. You know, are there stats out there that somebody keeps, Eric, that would give us a sense of, you know, how many people are still playing board games these days?
I have not seen stats on that. I have seen stats talking about increasing game sales at retail outlets. What I've seen is 15 to 20% increases over each of the past 3 years.
That's amazing to me.
I attend a convention each year that draws 150,000 people, where typically there's 700 new games being shown. There's a convention that takes place in Tokyo tomorrow, and it's kind of like an independent game designer meeting where these guys will print up 100 copies of a game, sell out, and be done with it. You'll never see it again.
Really?
It's a very diverse market that reaches a lot further than what you find at mainstream stores, but most of it's just invisible. It's kind of like the indie music scene, where if you're not into it, it's all a mystery to you. And then you find something, and that leads to something else and some new discovery. Lots of new people doing things where they have these things you never thought about before, rather than just business or taking over a country or something like that.
Well, why do you think board games endure, Eric? You know, in this era of Minecraft and Angry Birds and all these hot digital games that my kids play, why are, you know, board games, which still have sort of an old-fashioned tinge attached to them, why do they endure?
Well, they have the same appeal as the digital games. You have a different world that you get to go visit for some amount of time, but with a Minecraft, you're in that world all on your own. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can call other people into the game, but typically you're not in the same room with them. You don't interact with them. You don't see their face when you crush them and, you know, break their hopes. You know, you want that experience of interacting with people. And then there are some games that you can't play except in an analog form, all sorts of dexterity games where you're racing by flicking disc around a track, you know, different things like that that aren't possible, that don't feel the same if you're, you know, moving a joystick or
A couple points as phone calls come in here, 816-235-2888. We want to know what your favorite board game is. Do you still play them or not? You know, what is the all-time top-selling board game, Eric?
top selling is going to be Monopoly. That sells hundreds of thousands of copies each year. And I don't see anything displacing that for decades to come, mostly through nostalgia and familiarity.
Who invented Monopoly?
There's a lot of, you know, the history is kind of shaded. A woman named Elizabeth Maggie created the Landlord's Game in the early 1900s. And versions of the Landlord's Game, which was a game about the evils of owning property, versions of that game went out into the public and other people found it. And then eventually, I'm flaking on his last name, Charles.
Yeah, sure. Somebody
went to Hasbro or went to Parker Brothers and pitched it as his own design. And he had customized it to some degree, but, you know, it dates back to her creation.
You know what strikes me about those games like Monopoly and Risk, and I know I'm dating myself a little bit here from, you know, my years as a little kid, but you'd play those games on a rainy summer afternoon, and if you were winning, it was great fun. If you were getting beat, it was like, you know, slow motion, torturous death, because it just, you know, you're going out of business would just take forever, and you knew you were, and the guy who's winning keeps winning, and it's, man, winning's fun, but losing in those games is really pretty tough.
It is. There's a huge movement in the field of cooperative games. Hmm. It really started in 2000. There was a cooperative version of Lord of the Rings, where you have to collectively move the ring, right, back to Mount Doom, in order to save the land.
Ah.
There's a new version of Pandemic, where you try to fight diseases together. You win or lose together. Either, you know, you cure them all, or the world is eradicated.
Yeah. Are those games like a reaction to games like Monopoly, where, again, losing is so painful?
Not necessarily. Pandemic emerged from a designer who works at Google, and he was interacting with – he was interested in social networks, right, and how people interact with one another. And so this game – involves a lot of that, where you have to negotiate with other people and try to collectively solve a problem, just like you do at work.
Yeah.
But this is now for fun.
We're talking about board games and whether they still endure or not. It turns out they do. We're joined by Eric Martin, who's with a website called BoardGameGeek.com. Let's go to some phone calls here and get our listeners to talk about their favorite board games. Do they still play them or not? Megan from Lawrence, you're on Up to Date, Megan.
Hi. We play board games all the time. Of course, I've got a 5th-grade boy, 8th-grade boy, 21-year-old boy, and they're all huge online gamers and computer gamers. They love Minecraft. But we get together on the kitchen table, dining table, and play a lot of games. We love Monopoly, of course, but we don't like the other versions of Monopoly. We've bought the boys, like, the Star Wars Monopoly and stuff, but they don't go for that. They really want the old-fashioned, tried and true. We play Clue. We're looking forward to the Clue Firefly you were talking about. But the game we hate more than anything, the game that my husband and I just, we hate, is Life. The game of Life. We just don't want to play that. We just don't want to relive that.
Why not?
Go there. And we found out that if you don't go to college, you usually do better than if you do go to college, because you don't have any money to pay back. But the other thing is, we play a game called Royalty, which is a card game that's really awesome. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Royalty.
Mm-mm.
And also, I don't know if your guest is familiar with Elaine McGonigal. She did a TED lecture called How Games Are Going to Save the World.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting. She has made a couple of computer games. One's called World Without Oil, and one is called Super Better. And we were looking at Super Better as a way to help our students in our middle school that I was working in, as a way for them to set goals about positive behavior. So there are some really great applications for games that are just, you know, immersive in our world now. Yeah,
Megan, you're so interesting. Why does your family still enjoy getting together to play Monopoly? What is it about that game that you enjoy?
I don't know. I think it might be something about being like a wheeler dealer, or like a robber baron, or somehow like, I think it's the money. I really think they groove on the bank.
Yeah. Eric, you've heard of the game Royalty that Megan was talking about?
I've heard of it, but have not played it.
All right. Megan, great phone call. Thanks for making it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Rachel from Lee Summit. Rachel, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. My family likes to play Catan. Even we have one of the extents. We have the Seafarers expansion. That's really fun.
And what is Catan, Rachel? Just describe it to me in a sentence or two.
Well, it's a resource management game, so you have different things like wood and bricks, and you have to build things and make your empire big enough to beat the other people as far as how big your empire is.
Huh. Eric, you know that game?
Yes, that's typically – that's the best-selling of the hobby games, games that sort of have this alternative lifespan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It sold more than 15 million copies since it debuted in 1995. And it's a fantastic introductory game because it introduces new concepts of how a game can work. But it's a familiar setting where, oh, I have to collect resources, and I build stuff. I mean, it's a very familiar idea because that's often what you do in real life. You collect things, and then you go buy other things, you know, with the money.
Rachel, you also mentioned Ticket to Ride.
Yeah, we really like that game, and it's not difficult to learn, but it doesn't seem to get old. And that one, you have to make routes across the country, and they also have expansions for other countries and stuff like that. And it really is good for helping build strategy and things like that. And we like to play some of the old, you know, the traditional games that we grew up with too. But we're continuing to grow our new and interesting game closet.
All right. I appreciate the phone call, Rachel. Thank you.
If I can mention, Steve.
Yes, go ahead.
You talked about the issue of digital games. Ticket to Ride is one of many games that have an electronic version. You can buy an app and play it on your iPad or phone. And the company, Days of Wonder, has stated that that app has helped drive sales of the original board game.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because the original board game is $50, and the app is a few dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy it, play it. If you really like it, you're suddenly like, oh, I can play this with everybody at my family at the table. And
Eric,
it works as an introduction.
How many new games come on the market each year, you were saying?
This, easily 1,000 new games.
Man, that's amazing.
Our database on Board Game Geek has roughly 70,000 games in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we add at least 2,000 listings a year for expansions and limited releases and all sorts of different games.
Am I right? It seems like I remember a few years ago when Trivial Pursuit came out and how hot that game was for a while there. Have you seen games get that red hot like Trivial Pursuit did, or is that such a rare thing?
In the niche game community that we focus on, definitely games get extremely hot and sell out quickly. At the convention, the main convention I mentioned in Germany, people line up ahead of time, they pre-order games, and there may be only a few hundred copies, and boom, they're all reserved and sold out immediately.
Huh.
And then hopefully someone reprints it down the road.
Huh.
This is not the scale of a Trivial Pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes a game does catch on and you don't even expect it. There was a game called Love Letter where you're trying to deliver a love letter to a princess.
Hmm.
It consists of only 16 cards. It was introduced at this tiny Japanese game convention. A U.S. publisher happened to be there. The designer said, wait, let me pitch the game to you in 3 minutes. Publisher picked it up and has sold tens of thousands of copies since then. And if he hadn't seen it, it just would have disappeared. So sometimes things catch on. And
that's a great story.
You don't know why. It's just like any books and movies and everything else.
Has a game come along that sold as many copies as Trivial Pursuit did once upon a time?
Only if you're talking about games like Scrabble, Risk, Monopoly.
Okay, the old standbys.
Mainstream games.
Okay.
Even the new versions don't sell anywhere near that number, but they do introduce new ideas. There was a new version of Risk that came out a few years ago, Risk Legacy, where you would, if you won the game, you get to write on the board and claim an area as your own. And if you own that that area in a future playing of the game, you get a bonus. Because it was essentially your homeland. Or you'd open packets of cards that wouldn't be accessible until some later point in the game.
So trying to put a new spin on an old war horse there a little bit.
Yes, it changed over time as you play it. Kind of the way that digital games do, where you advance to new levels. I get new abilities.
Yeah.
Works the same way.
Back to some calls here. Kim from Peculiar, Missouri. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. We have shelves and shelves of board games in our basement. My family, there were regulars out at Pulp Fiction and Lee Summit. One, a couple different games. He was talking about one that's a both electronic and board game. The kids absolutely love Small World. And then there was, he was talking about cooperative games, and he probably knows the name of this one, but the kids love the one that's, it's, you play a bunch of drunken dwarves on a sinking ship that catches on fire, and you've got to work together to get yourselves out of the mess.
Yes.
Does that ring a bell, Eric?
That is the, what is it, the Hunt for Red November?
I'm honestly, the name is not, I'm not thinking what it is, but they absolutely love that game.
Just Red November.
That's the game. Into it also.
Kim, what do your kids love about board games?
Just playing together. I mean, they've introduced friends to it also because, you know, they had friends who, they were all electronics, but they'll bring them into the fold and, you know, play games both up at the shop and at home. And, you know, we have a table set up in the basement that's just for playing games on.
Yeah.
Everything
right.
from role playing to the board games to, you know, they just enjoy being together.
Okay. Kim, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Let's go
Kim,
to, yeah, she's gone. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's fine. I just want to say Kim mentioned you're playing drunken dwarves trying to escape from a sinking submarine. The most interesting thing about the modern games is that they cover topics that you never previously imagined.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, last night I played a game where you are pirates off the waters of China in the 1700s. And we played another game where you are cats running around the city and you try to get your pairs of cats together. And really, the only limitation on a game is what the designer comes up with mm-hmm. in terms of what they want to make a game about. It doesn't just have to be, I have the most money, I conquer the world, whatever, yeah. you know, things along those lines.
That's neat. Catherine from Leawood, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Oh, I was just going to say, I would have thought that the board game was something that maybe our generation tries to impose on our kids, but I was recently surprised when my college-age daughter brought home her boyfriend for a holiday break, and he came with a board game to introduce to our family that he and his housemates play in college. Then it's the Settlers of Catan. And he said they would wake up in the morning and start a game and leave it out on the table all day and kind of play it as they came and went and got into really heated heated battles with that game. So he brought it home for my teenage sons to introduce it to them, and we just had a great time with it.
Oh, that's great, Catherine. I appreciate the phone call. One more call here. Eric from Kansas City, Missouri. And Eric, go quickly, if you would.
Yeah, my friends and I play board games all the time. We call them Euro games because they're all developed over in Europe. Most of the games that we play, mostly Germany, seem to have a lot more interesting ideas. And I actually learned to play these types of games when I was teaching English in South Korea. There's an industry in Korea where you go to a building and you rent board games by the hour, and everybody is there playing
wow.
this
wow.
massive collection of games. And I had to learn a game in Korean from a friend who spoke English as well because we had no directions.
Oh, that's great. Eric, that's a different side of all this I didn't know about. Eric Martin, you just did a great job. So good to have you. Again, Eric Martin, he's with a website, BoardGameGeek.com. So good to have you, Eric. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Steve.